This podcast is free and it's accessible to everyone thanks to support from listeners like you. If you value this show, please consider supporting its production by donating to our home, KUOW. It only takes a minute to give, and you'll be helping to support the production of this podcast. Make a donation at kuow.org or follow the link in the show notes. And thanks.
You're listening to Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman. There's a fierce lobbying effort underway at Seattle's City Hall, and it has to do with how the people who deliver your takeout or your groceries should be paid. Delivery app companies like Uber Eats, DoorDash, Instacart, and Grubhub are waging a battle over a new Seattle gig worker minimum wage law that took effect in January. The fight is happening in the court of public opinion and in the halls of city government. And the city council is meeting today to discuss the future of the law after just a few months of it in place. Seattle Times City Hall reporter David Croman has been following this story, and he joins me now. Hey, David, thanks for being back on the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So give us some quick background here. The law passed in 2022 when Seattle City Council was significantly more progressive than it is today, and it took effect earlier this year. What changes has this law made to how delivery drivers are paid?
Yeah, I mean, I'll preface it with saying a lot of the changes that we're talking about, we think are happening, and they're sort of based on some surveys done by advocacy groups and a lot of anecdotal information. The thing is, though, that these companies that provide these services are really hesitant and basically refuse to produce any of their own data. So a lot of what we're working off is kind of collections of stories. That said, what we do know is that since the minimum wage for gig workers went into effect, a lot of the companies have put in kind of extra service charges, $5 up to, you know, even more than that. And as a result, you know, if you're just sitting at home and you want a burrito or whatever, and you order through DoorDash, the chances of your burrito being a lot more expensive have gone way up. And so the effect that the companies are saying they're seeing, and that frankly, a lot of drivers are saying they're seeing also, is people just not placing as many orders, particularly those kind of one-off single burrito or single meal for one person. And as a result, you know, drivers are saying that they're waiting longer to get jobs, that tips are down. And as a result, you know, some drivers are saying that they're actually, despite this minimum wage being in place, they're actually making less than they were before.
And this law, just to set the table here, it requires companies to pay at least 44 cents per minute plus 74 cents per mile during orders, or a minimum of $5 per order. I mean, Seattle already has a minimum wage that is one of the highest in the nation. What was the goal of this legislation when it passed, David? I mean, how did supporters frame why they needed a separate law for gig workers?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on who you ask what the goal of this legislation was. I mean, the reason that gig workers needed a separate minimum wage here is that they're technically independent contractors and therefore not subject to the city's minimum wage. So this is kind of creating a second tier to try and regulate a minimum wage for them. But the thing is, you know, unlike a restaurant worker who goes to work for 8 hours and then is done for 8 hours and you get paid for each hour, a gig worker is a lot more complicated than that, because you know, someone might sign on for 45 minutes or for a couple hours and then leave the platform. And, you know, you're not working through that whole period. So, you know, 25 to 30 minutes out of an hour might be spent actually making a delivery. That's not to say that they're not engaged or trying to get jobs at that time. It's just sometimes deliveries are not available to them. And so the balance that the city was trying to strike is, how do you kind of create a formula that accounts for all of that? The fact that these independent contractors sort of working much squishier schedules than kind of a typical worker, and get something close to a minimum wage. And so that's where you get that kind of per mile minimum payment per minute standard, that they're trying to thread the needle to kind of get something that looks like a close to a minimum wage.
And they're also using their own vehicles, right? It's like wear and tear on the vehicles was part of that consideration also. You know, I know we don't have the data directly from the companies, but I've heard you say a little bit about these anecdotes that we're getting and companies are collecting and various groups are collecting. I mean, do we know how the promise of the law stacks up to reality yet? Like, have these drivers been seeing their wages go up?
Yeah, it's hard to say sort of definitively, but I will say that, you know, one thing that I was expecting to hear from this debate was that I was expecting the kind of backers of this original law to say, you know, all these drivers are benefiting in sort of X way, and the opponent saying, no, it's actually hurting them. We've seen those sort of he said, she said debates before. In this case, though, it was interesting that the backers of the law are actually acknowledging that they are hearing frustrations and complaints from the drivers that their work schedules have been upended a little bit. So that's why I think we can say with a little more confidence that there has actually been an effect on the work environment, and that a lot of drivers, you know, even drivers who favored this law to begin with, have expressed some level of frustration. The debate is whether the service charges that the companies have put on are in good faith. Of course, the companies say, yes, it's covering the cost of, you know, the higher cost of delivery. The people who passed this law are arguing that the companies put these service chargers in as sort of a Trojan horse to exploit this law and then, you know, have something to blame as an effort to try and repeal it. That's where, you know, we can't say definitively one way or the other without internal data from the companies. But that seems to be kind of where the debate is lying at this point, is, you know, the motives of the companies, really.
Yeah. Were these fees that were levied after this law took effect necessary, or were they opportunism and an effect to kind of put pressure on maybe the city council also long term to look at repealing this? And to be clear, the frustrations from the drivers, what are they reporting seeing since the law took effect?
I think the biggest thing they're reporting is just a lot longer between trips that they're waiting. So it used to be, you know, you'd make a food delivery and then you'd sit in your car for 10 minutes kind of waiting for that next order to come in and you snag it. You know, the data from this one group, Drive Forward, which gets funding from the companies and is generally sort of friendly to the companies, but they surveyed more than 500 drivers, so it's a pretty good sample size. And they found that the number of drivers reporting waiting 30 minutes or more between trips has gone way up. So, you know, that would be a problem, because if you're earning more per trip, that's fine, unless the number of trips you're getting is way down, and then your hourly rate might actually decrease. And so that I think is kind of the big one. You know, we're also hearing that maybe tips are down. Mm-hmm. But I would say that the biggest one is just how long and how competitive each job is to get.
What about these restaurants or businesses that are actually producing the food that drivers deliver? How are they affected so far? What are we hearing?
Yeah, we're hearing similar concerns, because, you know, I think the pandemic really accelerated a shift toward DoorDash and Uber Eats and this kind of takeout model, because people weren't leaving, but they still wanted to eat out and support their business, their favorite restaurants or whatever it might be. And so, you know, there was a big shift towards this business model of using these delivery services.
I never once had a food meal delivered to my house, David, until the pandemic. And now exactly. I am in a mode where occasionally I will still use an app to have my food delivered. It fully changed my lifestyle.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're certainly not alone in that at all. And so I think a lot of restaurants kind of built their businesses like a little more geared toward that delivery system. Now they're seeing that that's falling off. And, you know, I think some of that is probably that people are going out more and going back to their office a little bit more. And so naturally there would be a little decline. But restaurants are saying that the difference between before January 13th and after January 13th, which is when this law took effect, that day has actually been like a fairly clear marker that they've seen a decrease in the number of orders that they're getting, particularly, again, kind of smaller orders, one-off, you know, someone who's sitting at home working and wants a burrito for lunch, the number of people who are doing that order apparently has gone way down. And so that, of course, is frustrating to restaurants as well.
Sure. If you have a small order, that single delivery fee that's the same across all orders is going to be a bigger proportionally burden on you, right? So you're probably going to think twice. Okay, so is anybody defending this law at this point?
Yes. I think the kind of main defender is this group Working Washington. It's a labor-backed advocacy group that helped pass it into place. Again, you know, they're not denying that drivers are frustrated. They're acknowledging that drivers are frustrated and seeing a change in their working environment, as we said before. They're saying, though, that the fault lies with the company, that the companies, that they took advantage of this law to increase their profits, and that they could their argument is that they could easily eat these minimum wage increases and still be profitable. They're also saying that it's frankly just too early, you know, that we don't have a full year of data on this. You know, they draw a parallel to the Seattle's minimum wage, broader minimum wage, that there was a lot of concern from restaurants and businesses at the time, but then over a number of months and years, that debate kind of died down and the market kind of stabilized a little bit. And so they're saying that, A, we need to be putting pressure on these companies, you know, show their work, basically show their math. And B, that we need to give it more time to kind of let things even out and stabilize. And they're saying, you know, repealing it or rolling it back in any way right now would be premature.
It does feel pretty fast. I mean, it's only been a couple of months. So now what is the city council talking about today, David?
Yeah, so the big shift would be, so, well, I'll say up front that the companies still want this fully repealed. They have said basically as much. That is almost certainly not going to happen. The mayor and council president have expressed support for some kind of minimum wage guarantee for app-based workers. So the biggest switch that we're looking at is, first of all, a smaller mileage reimbursement rate, that would go down. You know, I think it's 12% decline by per minute and maybe a 40% decline by mile. But then arguably the kind of biggest shift would be, instead of setting a minimum kind of per trip or per minute that people are earning, they would set that based on sort of a week or 2 week snapshot. So at the end of that week, when drivers are going to get paid, the companies would look, if you were below minimum wage, they would top you up to meet exactly minimum wage. If you were above it, you could keep that money. The argument there is that the previous calculation was exceeding that hourly minimum wage in a way that the companies say were forcing them to add these service charges. By switching to kind of this weekly look back, you put more control in the hands of the companies to tailor those wages to look something more exactly like the kind of broader $20 minimum wage that we have in the city.
Hmm. And this is a proposal coming from Drive Forward, which you said gets funding from the app companies. But the proposal is not in line with what the companies are asking for, which is a full repeal. I mean, is it clear like how this is getting negotiated?
Drive Forward is negotiating, has been negotiating with the companies. Council President Nelson has kind of pushed that, saying, basically, I want to consider one proposal from both of you. So my expectation is at the end of the day, this is whatever ends up getting, you know, moving through city council is going to be what the Drive Forward group and these companies end up backing. The companies would like a full repeal, but at the same time, I think they understand that that's almost certainly not going to happen. And so they, given the choices they have, they're going to back something that would make that minimum wage reimbursement a little bit less if the choice of full repeal is not actually realistically on the table.
Now, what happens to these service fees, which, as we said, are being called opportunism or a Trojan horse by supporters of the law? The companies are arguing that they're necessary to cover the costs of the raised wages for gig workers under this new law. If the law is diminished and not repealed, are these companies going to keep charging these new service fees?
I think that's the big question, yes, because the proposal that is out there right now does not require that they repeal those service charge fees. The companies, people that I have talked to said, you know, we will reduce them commensurate with the reductions in this new proposal. I think they understand that if the city council reduces that hourly minimum wage for app-based workers and they don't make any tweaks to the service charges, suddenly the argument of the other folks that it's opportunism starts to carry a lot more water because there's no kind of reaction. And so I think the companies probably understand that. But at the same time, I have not heard them say anything about, yes, we will fully repeal these service charges. I think more likely or possible is that a $5 service charge would maybe go down to a $2 service charge or something like that. But it is ultimately up to the companies because the proposals we've seen haven't included any requirement.
David, I have seen a bunch of press releases in my inbox, and it's just one of the ways I can tell. There's been this full court press from the companies to say this law sucks. They hate this law. They want it gone. Is there any sense you can give us of how big of a lobbying effort is underway? And are drivers' voices getting through as well to the council?
Yeah, I mean, I think the app-based companies, and this applies to Uber and Lyft too, have always done a lot of lobbying. And you can go online and look up lobbying reports, and they have to track their hours, and all the sign-in sheets are public. And so you can see that there are representatives from these companies that are making pretty regular visits. And, you know, I mean, I think these companies would say that they are representing what they're hearing from drivers, and Drive Forward would certainly say that. I think groups like Working Washington would contest that. At the same time, though, you know, this city council, I think, was always, it's not like the lobbyists have convinced the city council to do something that they weren't interested in doing already, necessarily. I mean, we had so much turnover with the city council that basically everybody who voted in favor of this minimum wage in the beginning is no longer on the city council. So there's just not the same people there to defend this law as there was before. And the new city council members that have been elected are almost unanimously more sympathetic to kind of the business community. And I think this was always going to be a proposal that would get a quick second look. The surprise is kind of how quickly this is getting revisited.
Yeah, let's just, before we go, talk briefly about this new makeup of the city council. As you say, it's a lot different than it looked in 2022 when the law passed. You know, Sarah Nelson is the council president. She used to kind of be an outlier, a more conservative member of the council, and now she really sits solidly with a majority of more centrist members. Does this potential policy reversal on gig worker pay tell us anything about how the council is going to approach other laws, labor related and otherwise?
Yeah, it does and it doesn't. I mean, I think this one is pretty specific in that they are getting a lot of pressure from restaurants and businesses to do something about restaurants and businesses and drivers, some drivers to an extent, to do something about this fairly quickly. But I think more broadly, and we've heard this already from the city council, you know, a lot of the conversation on the city council dais right now is specifically about how they are not the previous council. They seem to really be trying to define themselves as a reaction and a course change from what the city council was doing. And, you know, I mean, I think they're doing that because it worked on the campaign trail. That was their campaign message. And then they all got elected. And so they're really carrying that forward into City Hall. And so I think, yes, you're right, that this is sort of a symbol of their broader agenda, which is revisiting some of these labor laws that were put into place, revisiting, of course, conversations that were had around public safety. And, you know, I think this city council's identity is in a lot of ways going to be defined by what they are not, which is their predecessors.
Hmm. David Croman is a Seattle Times staff reporter. He covers City Hall. David, thanks very much. I know you're going to be following this gig worker law for the Times, and we'll be following your coverage there, and appreciate you coming on as always.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to Soundside. Up next on the show, many Washington residents who were overpaid unemployment benefits during the pandemic are still waiting to hear if they have to repay the state. We'll explore what's going on coming up in a minute on KUOW. Thanks for listening to Soundside. This show is only possible because listeners support us. If you're able to give right now, please check out the show notes for a link to donate. And don't forget, you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 FM Seattle at noon and 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, or anytime online at KUOW.org.
Seattle in the 90s. A tidal wave of iconic music roars out of this sleepy city and launches a pop culture revolution. Here's a story you haven't heard. Let the Kids Dance is a new podcast about the rise and fall of Seattle's teen dance ordinance, the law that made it illegal for young people to go to concerts. A story of moral panic, grassroots activism, and an unstoppable music community that fought for its freedom. Listen to Let the Kids Dance from KUOW and the NPR Network.